Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. All that rain last week, did it make you feel a little gloomy? For others, it provided the opportunity to mate in vernal pools, which form temporarily each year from rain and melted snow to provide the breeding grounds for many, many organisms, animals, and plants. These unique wetlands are at risk, but today we'll learn more about these important habitats and why we need to protect them. Today we'll talk with three environmentalists working to preserve Ohio's vernal pools. Later on, we're going to hear from Mick Mikashan. He's a wetland ecologist for the Ohio EPA, and also John O'Meara. He's the executive director of the Metro Parks. Right now, we welcome David Celebrezzi. David is the director of Air and Water Special Projects at the Ohio Environmental Council. His focus in the water program is the Wetlands and Streams Project, including vernal pools. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So I guess we should start out with the definition of vernal pools, because frankly, I probably walk by one every single day and had not heard of them until you folks gave me a call a couple months ago.
And there's a couple different definitions out there, and the one I like to use is that it's a mini ecosystem that plays out every spring. When the rain melt, or when the rain falls and the snow melts, they fill up and they provide a forum, if you will, for lots of species, probably thousands of species. And then by summer's end, they're usually all dried up. You don't even know it's there. A more technical definition of a vernal pool is that it's a wetland. So, and there are many types of wetlands. There's fens, there's bogs, there's swamps, marshes, and there's vernal pools. So they have hydric soils, the soils that kind of smell like rotten eggs. They have to have some type of hydrology level, water level. And certain species use them or utilize them. So that's kind of a broad definition of what a vernal pool is. There is some conjecture of, does it need to draw down every year? And when I say draw down, I mean dry up every year, or maybe it's every other year, or maybe it just kind of shrinks real tiny-like, but then it doesn't really quite draw
just down. Just enough for the dog to roll in when you're
that's
taking
right.
it out for a walk.
That's right.
I've seen those. So you're saying thousands of species. These things are temporary, all things being equal. Generally, they're temporary. How can thousands of species propagate and mate and do what they do in such a really relatively short period of time?
It's really amazing. And you could have, let me back up and say, you could have a vernal pool that's maybe 10 feet by 10 feet, or you could have a vernal pool that's an acre or two in size. So they really vary in terms of the size.
It has more to do with the depth.
In terms of certain species such as the tiger salamander, they need a vernal pool that's a little bit deeper than, say, a spotted salamander doesn't need as deep of a pool. But when you start getting down to that microbial level, if you will, or that macroinvertebrate, what's a macroinvertebrate? Well, it's one of those little bugs that you can see with the naked eye. You don't need to get a magnifying glass. So, for instance, I'm trying to think of some of the more common macroinvertebrates.
Is there a shrimp?
There is a shrimp. It's called the fairy shrimp.
Fairy shrimp. I was going to say angel shrimp, but yeah, fairy shrimp. Okay.
And the fairy shrimp is really amazing. They can only be found in vernal pools here in Ohio. They hatch out of eggs. For the scientists out there, they're called cysts. And when they hatch out, there's usually ice still over the top of the vernal pool. In fact, there's some video that we had shot looking through about an inch and a half of ice, and you just see these real tiny specks of things moving around all around. So even though from the outside, when you're walking by and you look and it looks like it's a desolate, you know, winter tundra, if you dig down a little bit deep, you could see that it's just a plethora of life.
Can a vernal pool be like one of those fields that gets really soggy every year?
It could be, and that's the thing with the vernal pools is they're very dynamic. You could have a high-quality vernal pool, let's say, in woods, or you might have one that's out in a farm field that the farmer just doesn't cultivate. And you could there have been records of crayfish living in these farm fields, you know, because they hold water for part of the time in the springtime.
So when the vernal pool dries up, if and when it does, if it's that kind of vernal pool, how did the species survive to come back the next year?
It's a great question. Some species migrate in. You have, like, with the amphibians, the salamanders.
And they know there's going to be a vernal pool over there, so they go there every year.
As long as it's not destroyed, they do.
Right.
With that, you have the animal, like with the salamanders, they have somewhat high fidelity rate to the vernal pool that they crawl out of, so to speak. And with some of the other creatures, they just burrow down in the muck, like with the fairy shrimp. They lay their eggs, they fall down to the pool bottom and stay in the muck until the next year. And the interesting thing about them is even if the conditions are just right, only about 3% of those eggs will actually hatch. And the reason why is if you have a warm spell where everything melts and all of a sudden it jumps to life, but then we have a cold spell and everything freezes over, they'll all die. So it's kind of an evolutionary technique to ensure the propagation of the species.
My guest is David Celebrezzi. He's director of air and water special projects at the Ohio Environmental Council. We're talking about vernal pools. Never heard of them before. A few months ago, I'm ashamed to say, although I've probably seen them. You've probably seen them many times yourself. If you have any questions about them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go on the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there if that's what floats your boat. How can you tell the difference between a body of water that is a vernal pool and just a big puddle, or are big puddles vernal pools? I don't know.
No. We hold yearly workshops, and I usually get that question of, you know, there's a tire rut in my driveway with some water. Is that a vernal pool?
And every year the tire rut appears.
Yeah, that's right. And the answer is no, it's not a vernal pool. Again, it needs to meet certain criteria. It needs to have certain soil types. It needs to have certain water levels. Certainly, if you have species such as the wood frog or spotted salamander or even our fun-loving fairy shrimp, chances are it's a vernal pool. And there's, like I said, there's different types of vernal pools. There are some that are in the forest, and that's where you kind of have your a lot of the salamanders like that one because they need a lot of space after they leave the vernal pool. And same with some of the frogs as well. But you could have a vernal pool in your neighborhood. Let's say you have a park and there's a wet area there.
Mm-hmm.
It could very well be a vernal pool. But somebody would have to go out there and verify it. Since it is a wetland, the state of Ohio classifies wetlands that it must meet certain criteria. So someone would have to go out there and verify that it is indeed a wetland. And you can create vernal pools. In fact, over at the Park of Roses, the Whetstone Park, there's a vernal pool that was created there. And there's some throughout the county mm-hmm. here that have been created.
And anybody can do it.
If you got a strong back, mm-hmm. weak mind like myself, then yeah, it's pretty easy to build them.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about how to do that later on. So there's an area in the park where I walk that floods every year. And every year it floods. Is that a good possibility for a vernal pool? It's by the river.
It could be. The one thing about vernal pools that I failed to mention earlier is that they're not supposed to have any predatory fish. So no bass, no bluegill, because they will just wipe out the amphibian population and a lot of the macros because they're just voracious eaters. And a vernal pool is usually not connected to a river. Now, you can have an instance where the river might flood and then the overspill kind of collects in the depression, and that could very well be a vernal pool.
Okay. And also, when you talk about the species, it's shocking. There's this book that you all loaned me. It's called Ohio's Hidden Wonders, A Guide to the Animals and Plants of Vernal Pools. This is really fat and thick. It's beautiful, by the way. We're not just talking about amphibians. There are special plants. There are certain kinds of, well, of course, you mentioned the macroinvertebrates, spiders, turtles, dragonflies, damselflies, snakes, and you mentioned salamanders and frogs and toads.
It really is a cacophony of animals and sounds. Like when you're out there in a vernal pool, for instance, a spring peeper, they grow about an inch and a quarter in length, but they can be heard up to, I believe it's a mile away. So to put that in perspective, if me or you were a spring peeper, it would be like somebody being able to hear us about 30, 34 miles away. So these little creatures are just amazing.
Let's hear them. This is the wood frog and spring peepers. Okay, I thought a spring peeper was more of a squeaky sound.
It is.
That sounds like a clucking sound.
That was the wood frog. And the wood frogs, they do kind of sound like ducks, or I kind of like to say they sound like little evil elves that are laughing.
Yeah.
but they're not very loud, the wood frogs. But when you're out in I usually say the pool, and sometimes that tricks some of my friends because I'll be going out. It'll be 9 o'clock at night. And I'm like, I'm headed out to the pool, and they're like, "What are you talking about?"
Uh-huh.
But they could be deafening, the spring peepers. One point during the season, I had to wear earplugs when I was out there because I forgot my earplugs one day, and it was just my ears were ringing afterwards.
When you get there, don't they stop?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And that's kind of could be a scary moment in the pool is when you get out there and they don't stop, but then all of a sudden you're out there just watching them, and then all of a sudden you have thousands of these spring peepers stop all at once, and you're thinking, well, if they didn't stop for me, what else is out here? And should I be concerned?
Exactly. In any given vernal pool, will there be lots of different frogs? Lots of different kinds of frogs?
It depends on the quality of vernal pool. In some of your lower quality vernal pools, you could have green frogs and bullfrogs. In some of the higher quality vernal pools, you'll have the wood frog. And the wood frog, for listeners, it's a kind of a medium-sized frog, kind of pink in coloration, and it has this black mask, which kind of makes it the superhero of the frog world. And they're really amazing. They actually, parts of their body could actually freeze during the wintertime. And so they kind of turn into little rocks. And then as soon as the first summer thaw or spring thaw happens, they defrost, so to speak, and they hop to the pool, and they're one of the first frogs that you could hear. But they require a lot of woods. They require about 1,000 meters of woodland for their habitat. So they are a sensitive species. So if you have wood frogs, chances are you have a decent habitat there.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll be joined by Mick Mikishan of the Ohio Department Natural Resources. The Ohio EPA Division of Surface Water. He's a wetland ecologist. And also John O'Meara, he's the executive director of the Metro Parks. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Today at noon, it's a CMC 35th anniversary event featuring chimpanzee expert Jane Goodall. Goodall greets just about every audience in chimpanzee for a reason. She, perhaps more than anyone on Earth, is best suited to act as an ambassador for this amazing species. Tickets and more information at columbusmetroclub.org.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Home Instead Senior Care, helping families eliminate worry, reduce stress, and reestablish personal freedom. More at 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead. To us, it's personal.
And it's 52 degrees currently in downtown Columbus. Rain off and on throughout the day today. We could see a thunderstorm, a high of 67. A chance of rain tonight and a low of 30. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about vernal pools. If you have a question or comment for us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Vernal pools should be as common as puddles, I guess, but they aren't anymore. Joining us now to talk about the vernal pool and its importance to our ecology is Mick Mikishan. Mick is a wetland ecologist for Ohio EPA's Division of Surface Water Wetland Ecology Group. He develops and assesses Ohio wetlands. Welcome to the show, Mick.
Thanks, Ann. It's great to be here.
Also with us is John O'Meara. John is executive director of the Metro Parks. It's a collection of 16 metro parks encompassing more than 26,000 acres and attracting 6.5 million visitors a year. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Ann.
On those 26,000 acres, how many vernal pools do you think are out there?
You know what? We don't have an accurate count. I asked my staff that the other day in preparation for this, and we probably have over 100 naturally occurring vernal pools. We've also restored somewhere in the range of 30 to 50 vernal pools through the year. So we realize how important they are to a healthy environment, and we've been trying to restore some habitat in areas that have been disturbed to bring back some of these wildlife, both rare and common, that, that rely on these habitats.
I read this the statistic, Mick, that a couple hundred years ago there might have been 5 million. I'm sorry. That's wrong. You just gave me the look. But there's just 10% of the vernal pools left from a couple hundred years ago.
Well, I think that figure is on the total wetlands in the state.
Okay.
And I think, yeah, originally we had about 5 million acres.
Okay.
And we've lost 90% of our wetlands, so we are sitting around about 500,000 acres. That's all types of wetlands.
How much of that is made up of vernal pools?
Vernal pools are make up a fair percentage of our wetlands. You know, maybe on a statewide basis, somewhere in 30 to 40%. So that would have probably been historically about the same.
And is the problem with the loss of wetlands the same for all wetlands? It's all about construction and development and that kind of thing?
I think a little more for vernal pools. They're sensitive to more sensitive than some other systems to the land uses that are going on around them. And because of the type of things, the organisms that use them, like Dave was discussing, mm-hmm. They require, you know, a certain amount of intact habitat surrounding the pools in order to still be able to be present in utilizing the pool. So in some respects, the land use surrounding the pools is also important.
Jane from Granville, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question, and I live in an area where as soon as the raccoons and the possums and the gophers come out of hibernation, they're all over my bird seed, they're all over my yard. And how do the vernal pools protect themselves, or why aren't these predators attracted to the vernal pools? Or maybe they are, and that was my question, is, you know, sort of the nature of all the things that are coming to life in the spring.
I think those things are attracted to vernal pools, so the predators do go looking for salamanders and frogs and other delicacies to eat, but these things have evolved over centuries, millions of years actually, to survive. So things are good at hiding in the leaves and the debris and under the branches in the bottom of the pools. They tend to be more active at night, which, of course, some of the raccoons and so forth also get more active because that's when the food's available. But so there is a balance between the raccoons and other things that would like to eat these small animals and the animals that come to breed in these areas.
I've certainly been in vernal pools in the evenings watching the salamander breeding runs, and have had parts of salamanders fall out of trees because owls were up there preying on the salamanders.
And it really is just, it's kind of a mini protein packet if you think about it. In the springtime when they come out, you know, the first rain on that night where it's 40 or 50 degrees, most people are inside. Then you have people like us who are just waiting for that type of weather to go out there and see the mass migration. If you have a high-quality vernal pool, you could have, we're talking thousands of salamanders coming out, spotted salamanders.
Really?
Come out, and it almost looks like the forest floor is moving. Because there's so many. You know, I joke with people that, yeah, Africa has the elephants and all that. That's all good. But we got the salamanders over here.
And I don't know how long it's been since I've seen a salamander. What about you, Jane?
It's been a while, actually. Down in Hocking Hills, when I used to go with my daughter, and we would turn over rocks and look for things like that. But it has been a while.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
If you'd like to give us a call, you can call 614-292-8513, and you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment for our guests. We're talking about vernal pools. In Ohio's Hidden Wonders, the Guide to Animals and Plants of Vernal Pools, it mentions that there's much debate about what constitutes a vernal pool. And I was wondering, why the debate? What's the debate about?
Well, I think the debate is there's a lot of different criteria that can be put on them. And some of it depends which organisms you're talking about. So we have these different life histories, and some organisms need the pools to get wet at certain times, need them to maintain that water for a certain period of time. And so there's this kind of overlapping life histories where if one stays wet or longer, then it's going to satisfy more of the life histories. Whereas others, there are some species, though, that require the pool to be wet for a very short period of time, or else you won't find them there. So there's kind of this this competition going on for habitat, and the ecology of all the organisms are different. And so you can have vernal pools that maybe only have to stay inundated for a couple months to be effective, And then we have others that maybe are wet for 6 months or more, and even some that may are sometimes permanent.
And if some are wet for too long, you can lose species that way?
Yes. When they're inundated for too long, then we get a group of organisms that start utilizing the pools that are predaceous on the other organisms. Particularly, Dave was talking about predaceous fish would be an example.
Mm-hmm.
There's some predator invertebrates that will come into permanent pools that you don't get in the temporary pool. So a lot of limiting factors like that to the longer periods of water.
Okay. Scott from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing? Actually, I'm just curious about what strange animals may have you seen in some of these vernal pools that you wouldn't normally see. For instance, I'm from Northwest Ohio, and I once, I know this sounds very crazy, but I'm a herp major. I once viewed a eastern Massasauga in Allen County in a vernal pool and reported and everything, but I'll take my...
Okay, wait a minute. What's an eastern Massasauga?
Just small rattlesnake that,
okay.
That are common. I think there's one spot in Northwest Ohio, and there's another spot in a bog called Cedar Bog, which is actually not a bog at all. I believe it's a fen near Urbana. But I'll gladly take this bear, but just interesting to see what strange animals people have seen or found in some of these vernal pools.
All righty. Thanks, Scott. So what are some of your favorite sightings?
I've never seen an eastern Massasauga in a vernal pool. I wish I had. They really are more of a prairie, wet prairie species, like you were saying. But probably the strangest thing I've seen, and it's not strange at all because it was again up in Northwest Ohio in the Oak Openings area, was I did see a hognose snake in a vernal pool, but that's not unusual up there because that's in their range and they utilize wetlands. Usually we get a range of pond breeders, that are in these sites, the more the pool varies from being a typical vernal pool, then the more chance you have of pulling in some other species. At times you can get pickerel frogs, which is a real sensitive frog species, normally associated with groundwater systems, but I have found these in vernal pools at times, and that was kind of a highlight of some of the monitoring I've done.
What about you, John?
Well, I think some of the things that we associate just because we go out there and look for them, like mm-hmm. fairy shrimp, when you think about shrimp living in Ohio, actually several species of shrimp living in Ohio. To me, that is an example of something that's unusual that you can find in lots of different vernal pools.
They really look like shrimp.
They really do look like shrimp. They're crustaceans, or aquatic crustaceans like a shrimp. Probably the rarest thing, we actually have a species, and this is one for the scientists, like most of the public can't relate to it. We have a water mite out of Black Lick Woods in one of the vernal pools there that has never been found anywhere else in the world. So it isn't truly one of the rarest species around, but it's a small aquatic mite that most people won't ever go looking for.
What about you, David?
Just in the same light, when I first started going out in the field and learning about vernal pools, it was all alien to me. If you go up to somebody here in Central Ohio and say, "Do you know where I could find some clam shrimp, or where the copepods or daphnia are, or the water scorpions?" They're going to look at you a little funny. but all those species can be found in vernal pools, and it's not rare to find them in vernal pools.
Well, let's listen to the gray tree frog. It's the largest of Ohio's tree frogs, and it only measures 1 to 2 inches. I was surprised at that. Let's hear that. Okay, are those peepers in the background?
Those are peepers in the background.
All right, got us some peepers. The gray tree frog, is that very common, or is that unusual? Or
it's a pretty common frog across the state, and there's actually two species. There's Cope's gray tree frog and the gray tree frog. The gray tree frog is distributed throughout the state.
Okay.
Cope's is somewhat limited in its range, a little more southern. But, yeah, it's a very common frog, and it's actually – It's one that if you have some water around your backyard, even if you have a mowed lawn with some trees and shrubs, you can have this frog right in your backyard singing in the summer.
Okay.
It's kind of a fun one to try to search for. So if you're looking for a little entertainment for yourself or if you've got kids to go out, try to actually find one. Now, you hear that noise, you hear it very loudly, but it's somewhat ventriloquial. So when you actually go looking for them, they're actually much harder to find than you might guess.
And they stop. It seems like as soon as you start going near the sound, it stops.
Right.
And what we just heard, was that several gray tree frogs or could that have been just one or two?
They kind of have that machine gun like sound to them, and depending on how many you have, that sounded like maybe one or two out there. I've been out there when there have been dozens, and it's really cool. Some because they'll start off in the woods, and as the night progresses, they'll make their way to the pool. So it's almost like this march of
so they're
the
not
calls.
In the pool all the time. Then this is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a daily thing that they do to get to the pool, and then they leave it in the morning. Or
some frogs, yes. What they'll do is they'll migrate to the pool to breed, and then after they're done breeding, they'll usually head out. And that's also typical of the salamanders too. They'll go to the pool, breed, and then some of them will hang around for maybe a couple weeks, but some of them take off almost immediately.
Gosh, I remember when we used to find frog eggs. We thought that was so great. We'd bring them back in a jar and watch them sprout. Mike from Clintonville, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Vernal pools sound like mosquito factories. Should we be more worried about West Nile or dead salamanders? Thank you, and I'll be taking an answer on the
Thanks, Mike.
I'll just say, if you have dead salamanders in a vernal pool, that's a great indication that something's wrong in the area because they are amphibians, and so they absorb water and air through their skin. And so going to the mosquito question, that's an excellent question. Salamanders, amphibians, even animals like phantom midges, back swimmers, a whole host of creatures feed on mosquito larvae. So when you have a healthy vernal pool, you do not have a mosquito problem because the mosquitoes basically are providing lunch for everybody. The problem is when you have somebody come in, like for instance here, the way the regulations and wetlands are set up in Ohio, you can cut down all the trees in an area, and as long as you're above the high water mark, you don't have to get a permit. The problem is, as we've heard, with the salamanders and amphibians, they live in those woods. And so you're killing the predators of the mosquitoes. And so then you have the opportunity to have a mosquito-infested pool with no predators.
Yeah, Dave, and because of the concern with West Nile, there's been a lot of research that's gone on. And they found that the genus of mosquitoes that carry that virus are much more likely to be breeding in your the gutters on your roof, your empty plant plots, just casual water, water that's in old tires, and they're really not finding these in the vernal pools, at least the healthy functioning vernal pools.
You know, as I mentioned that we used to get the frog eggs and take them home, and as I said that, I thought, you know, you probably don't want people taking frog eggs out of the vernal pools, do you?
No, with our monitoring,
it's probably a bad idea.
with our monitoring program, we hold yearly workshops, and that's one of the things we tell the participants is when you are monitoring, you want to minimize the impact that you have. You're going to have some impact as you're out there in waders walking around, but we tell people don't take anything from vernal pools. If you lift up a log to see if there's a salamander under there, put that log back just the way you found it because we're really visitors in their world.
When you do these workshops, do you take people out to the vernal pools?
We do, and it's usually during the day. Okay. Sometimes you get lucky and you hit the migration the night before, and so you'll have some salamanders that are out there. But people are trained on how to identify a vernal pool, who lives in a vernal pool, the threats to the protection of vernal pools, and we'll go over the monitoring forms, and then we head out there.
You must do those at the Metro Parks, right, John?
We have quite a few programs in Metro Parks. We actually have programs designed for children and families, people of all ages, to come out and experience some of these things. So it goes back to your question. No, we really don't want things removed, but there are some high-quality wetlands that we don't necessarily want to disturb, but we also have lots of other areas where there are great educational opportunities. So we think it's actually good for you maybe to take your kids out there and explore some of them as long as you're careful. Much like David said, just you know, put it back as close as you can to where you found it.
Right. Harold from Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I had a quick question about the association between pollinators and the loss of wetlands and vernal pools and things of that nature, because there has been a disease problem with bees and a decline in butterflies and hummingbirds and other things like that that are normally associated with pollination, which is a critical part of the ecosystem. And I wondered how you felt about pollinators and wetlands and so forth.
I guess I'll jump in on that one. There are lots of species, as was mentioned earlier, that grow in wetlands and vernal pools and other type of wetlands that are important host species for many of these caterpillars and the caterpillars for moths and butterflies. And I think as you lose your wetlands, you lose those host species, and of course then you lose the animals that feed on those host species. And although they feed as caterpillars on some of those species, they are important pollinators for other species. So they don't feed, when they're in the adult stage and they're nectaring, they're going from different types of plants. So the caller's right in the sense that we're losing many species because we're losing our wetlands, and as part of that, we lose things that are important pollinators for other species.
Thanks for the call, Harold.
Sure.
In the book, Ohio's Hidden Wonders, there's a quote from John Muir. Naturalist, when one tugs at a single thing in nature, he finds it attached to the rest of the world. I love that quote. We have an email from Tim. He says, in my yard, I get flooding whenever it rains. I am considering building a catch pond with fish and a gazebo so I can watch the birds, etc. Can you refer me to sources for building an appropriate backyard ecology which will attract wildlife? I normally Google first and possibly go to the library for info. I live west of Greenlawn Cemetery and I'm not immediately near any streams or creeks. The closest is 1 mile away. So for someone like Tim, number one, if you're going to have fish and that sort of thing, it won't be a vernal pool.
That's correct. If he puts fish in there, so it depends what you want. Do you want a pond or do you want a vernal pool? The Soil and Water Conservation District actually does some very good programs on building both ponds as well as things like rain gardens, and he may want to think about something that's more of a rain garden than a pond, but it all depends what you want. I mean, that's really kind of an aesthetic decision as to what you want to put back there. But they give some good programs there. There are some through the Metro Parks as well, and I'm sure there's other good sources that maybe the other folks know about.
If he is interested in building a vernal pool, there's a couple guides that are out there that kind of take it step by step on how to build a vernal pool. If you just Google how to build a vernal pool, I believe the gentleman's name is Tom Beebehauser. Thank you. And I'm not going to try to spell it. But there's an excellent one out there. The other thing, too, is looking at the soils. Even though Ohio is historically has been a wetland-rich state, you can't just put a vernal pool anywhere. And that's something that we've seen for instance, if somebody impacts a wetland up here in Franklin County, they could technically replace it down in Cincinnati, and that doesn't help us here. But it needs to – you really want to check out the soils to see if you have the right soils to build a vernal pool or any type of wetland. Now, if you're just looking for a backyard area or a backyard habitat, certainly you can get the pond liners and things like that as well.
Okay. We're going to have to take another break. When we return, we'll get to the calls and the emails. If you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about vernal pools, so I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Supporting 89.7 NPR News is easier than ever when you become a sustaining member. Sign up online at wosu.org/sustainer. As a sustaining member, your donation is automatic, monthly, and ongoing. No more letters in the mail, and your WOSU member card will renew automatically. Every year, we'll confirm your membership, and you can cancel at any time. For as little as $5 per month, you'll be supporting the programs you love. Become a sustaining member now at wosu.org/sustainer.
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and we'll hear about the fight to give African wildlife a chance to live with dignity in their own land. And we'll discuss the rehabilitation and return of lions and other African species to the wild. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11.
Support for WOSU 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, presenting Goldie Hawn for the 2011 Keyholder event on May 11th at the Ohio Theater. Tickets and more information online at womensfundcentralohio.org.
And it's 52 degrees in downtown Columbus. Rain off and on throughout the day today. Maybe a thunderstorm as well, a high of 67. A good chance of rain tonight, a low of 29 degrees. There's a chance of rain mixing with a little snow on Thursday, a high of 39. And partly cloudy Thursday night, a low of 23. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about vernal pools. My guests, Mick McCashin, he is with the Ohio EPA, also John O'Meara with the Metro Parks, and David Celebrezzi with the Ohio Environmental Council. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, when I was reading about this and when I hear about the destruction of wetlands in Ohio and things like vernal pools, and we said that just 10% is left of the 5 million acres that Ohio claimed a few hundred years ago, it kind of made me think of the rainforest in South Africa. I mean, once you lose it, it's lost. Now, the rainforest, once that's lost, it's gone. But with vernal pools, we can try to replace them or protect them. And I was wondering there's the issue of replacing, but if you know there's a vernal pool out there, what can you do to protect it?
There are several things you can do. One is monitor it. So you can either go to a workshop to find out how to properly monitor a vernal pool and track the data. Over the course of a couple years, you might start seeing trends. Like maybe the first 2 years you monitor it, you have a high wood frog population, and then that third year, maybe it plummets for some reason. That could be an indication that you need to start looking around to see what the neighbors are doing. You know, maybe they're spraying pesticides or something along those lines. We have a program called the Vernal Pool Conservation and Restoration Fund. It's a shell program, meaning that we're still in the search of funds for it, but it would pay landowners $100 an acre of vernal pool, including buffer zone, for 10 years, or a year for 10 years, so $1,000 for a decade, to not impact that vernal pool and to monitor it and have us come out there and monitor it as well. We are concerned that they are disappearing at a rapid rate because of their small size. They're especially vulnerable, both through ignorance. People just don't know that they're there, right. And maybe they build a garage or something like that. Or unfortunately, maybe the person realizes what it is and they don't want to have it protected because they want to put a structure there. So they'll wait till the fall and then impact it. There's also Ohio's Vernal Pool Mitigation Program that I believe Mick is involved in that.
Tell us about that, Mick.
Well, we get the through the permitting process the need to have newly constructed wetlands to compensate for ones that are being lost, and we have historically not been getting vernal pool habitat for the ones that we've been losing. And so we're kind of encouraging vernal pool restorations as a good mitigation option. And actually, at the agency, my colleague, Brian Guerra, who's just an excellent GIS person, has put together a vernal pool model where he's identified high-quality vernal pools and then identified areas adjacent to them that would be very good for restoration opportunities. And so we're looking at areas that have hydric soils where we've got intact vernal pools nearby where a little bit of reforestation and building of pools would tie everything back together and increase the amount of vernal pool habitat we have. So we have resources like that that we're trying to get people to be aware of. And we are making an effort to try to get back some of our vernal pools through our mitigation process.
Mm-hmm.
And something else that people could do is just pay attention. The EPA puts out every other year, every 5 years, proposed rules on how a developer can impact a vernal pool and what the steps are that they have to take. And so right now there's some wetlands rules package out there And so people could write the EPA during the public comment period and let them know to protect not only vernal pools but all types of wetlands. So if a wetland's impacted here in Franklin County, we want to make sure that it's going to be replaced here in Franklin County. We also want to make sure that there's avoidance. Since we have lost so many of our wetlands, it's really important that we keep the few that we have. So the developer or the individual needs to really look around to see if there's a way to avoid that impact. And if people want more information on that, they could go to our website, which is www.theoec.org.
And we'll post that on the website.
Thanks.
At wosu.org/all sites. We'll post links to all the websites for the organizations represented today. So if you want to go to wosu.org/all sides, we'll have that there for you. And Bill in Westerville, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Ann. Hey, just love the topic. I just wanted to comment. I put in a paver patio, a big one, like 20 by 40 foot, and I put this in many years ago, like 8 years ago, and my son was in college at OSU, and he went to one of these, you know, street vendors that you see that sell tropical plants out of the back of the truck,
mm-hmm.
and he brought me two banana plants, okay, you know, banana trees about mm-hmm. 6 foot high, and I put them on the patio, and then he said to water them, you got to pour the water down it, and so that's what I did. I put the water on the top and watered them and everything. And all of a sudden, I had these little green frogs that showed up, okay? And, you know, I live by Hoover Dam, and I got all excited. And then I got kind of scared, like maybe I brought some tropical thing in.
An invasive species.
Yeah. And so I collected them, and I took them to OSU, and they looked at them, and, oh, they were just they were so funny and so great, okay? But it was just a green tree frog, you know, and you talk about wood frogs, okay, and everything. And I'm just going to say is they were attracted to the water that was in, like, in the banana leaves, and then I had a whole bunch of them, you know. And it was, like, amazing. And once I knew that it was okay, I didn't worry anymore, but I really thought that I had some sort of a tropical invasion of a frog.
Is it that simple to attract them? How do the frogs know it's even there?
You have to have the habitat nearby. So, you know, he mentioned he's by Hoover Reservoir, and there's some wetlands around Hoover Reservoir that, you know, the reservoir itself would have fish in it, but there's wetlands around that would be a pretty good breeding area for spring peepers and green tree frogs and other things. So, you know, they're... They have to have suitable habitat nearby, but as mentioned a few times, they go to the wetlands to breed a lot of times. Some things live in there year-round, but most of them go in there to breed, and then they go and they spread out, and they move into nearby habitat.
Like banana plant leaves. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, bye-bye, Ann.
Take
bye-bye.
Care.
And that David? Actually brings up a real concern of invasive species and their impact on our native wildlife. But also with vernal pools, if you're monitoring, if you're going to a vernal pool over here, then you're going to another one over there, you want to make sure you're washing off your waders in between, because you might have some hitchhikers on you. And that's another way to limit your impact, as well as, and I should have said this before, but anytime you handle amphibians, you should make sure your hands are wet, because they, especially salamanders, they have kind of a mucus layer that protects them. And so if you handle them with dry hands, it rubs that mucus layer off, and it increases their chances of getting an infection.
Okay. 614-292-8513, that's the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about vernal pools, how to protect them, and how to make some of your own. And Chuck, you're in Buckeye Lake. You have some new property out there. Welcome to the show.
Yes, we're thinking about buying a property at the Societal Point, and there's a wooded area in the back. I'm sure that there are some pools there. I'm concerned about our grandkids coming over, and these pools would attract poisonous-type snakes or something. Is this possible in that area?
Not very likely. We've got three species of poisonous snake in the state, and none of them are utilizing the type of habitat that you speak about. And actually, two of them, the copperhead and the timber rattlesnake, are pretty much limited to the eastern and extreme to eastern for the copperhead, and then southeastern for the timber rattlesnake. And we heard about the Massasauga, the eastern Massasauga, and that's more of a wet prairie species. It's only found in a few areas around the state, but I've never heard it reported anywhere near Buckeye Lake.
This wouldn't be at Buckeye Lake. This would be at Scioto Point. The wooded area backs up to the Scioto River.
Oh, okay.
I live at Buckeye Lake.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you on that.
Mm-hmm.
So where is Scioto Point?
It's near the Scioto River. It runs along the Scioto River. It's a development there of homes.
Which county is that?
It's Franklin County.
Yeah, you're not going to have a problem with poisonous snakes. They're not. We don't get them in Franklin County.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. Stephen and Pataskala, welcome to the show.
Yes, I've got some land in a floodplain near a stream there, and it floods out every once in a while. I don't want to do anything proactive per se, but would it be best just to leave it as is? And, I mean, I'd like to encourage a vernal pool aspect of the thing. Hello?
Yes, I guess I'll jump in first. This is John. Healthy functioning floodplains are very important habitat in their own right. They're also very important for the health of the stream. So there's lots of good reasons not to fill and do some things that might be disruptive. If you want a vernal pool, as I think David mentioned earlier, sometimes they do occur in floodplains, particularly in areas that don't flood every year. The areas that flood very frequently, you're going to get a lot of fish. You're going to get a lot of things. They won't be. They'll be important wetland habitats, but not necessarily vernal pools. So there's kind of a balance there. But you can have effective vernal pools kind of on the edges of those wetlands that don't flood as frequently.
And that's something else, too, is with wetlands in general, the amount of storm water that they hold. So all this rain that we're having, those wetlands are acting like a sponge, and they're soaking up that rainwater, and they're releasing it slowly. So if those wetlands aren't there, that water is going somewhere. It's going into our rivers at a faster rate. I think there was an EPA study or not to put you on the spot, Mick, but that revealed that 1 acre of depressional wetland in a vernal pool is a type of depressional wetland. It could cycle out thousands or millions of gallons of water throughout the year as it fills up and draws down. And
in other words, reduce flooding, the dangers of flooding.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for bringing that up. You wouldn't think that vernal pools would do an excellent job of flood protection and holding floodwaters, but the fact that they do fill up, dry down, fill up at the next rainfall, dry down, that all that water never gets into the stream systems. So they really do a great job of flood protection.
Thanks, Stephen, for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. It's always amazing when people buy in floodplains, and Stephen looks like he wants to leave, and he understands it is a floodplain, but then they build a house there, the battles that they face. Let's hear one more representative of a vernal pool. This is the Western Chorus Frogs and Northern Leopard Frogs doing a piece from, I don't know what. Okay, there's one in the back going. It's kind of like the lecherous old man in the background. And then there's the crickets in the front. That's what they sound like.
Yeah, it's almost like a finger over a comb type
yes.
thing. And I can't do it. I can do it some decent frog calls, but I can't do that one. and then I don't know if there's a northern leopard frog in there. I was trying to hear that one. But that one, for you listeners.
Is that the one in the background that I heard?
Yeah.
Okay.
And for the listeners out there who remember that movie, The Predator, or Predator back in the
80s,
to me it kind of sounds like that creature. It almost sounds like a low snarl type sound. But the calls came from Bohr Labs of Bioacoustics here at OSU. But each of those species, the northern leopard frog, they can be found in vernal pools.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. We have a few more minutes if you want to have a question or comment for our guest. We're talking about vernal pools in Ohio. We have an email from a listener. We'll try to grab a few more emails if you have time. Allsides@wosu.org is our address. This is from a listener. They say, love vernal pools and all the frogs, salamanders, etc., but have a soft spot for ducks and migratory waterfowl. Please discuss. Right now in our huge vernal pool in Madison County, we have a big flock of ringneck ducks. Very cool. So, ducks are okay?
Well, I think there's room for both types of habitats, and certainly that's what we've had historically in Ohio. And the one thing we know is we have seen a big decrease in vernal pools and the inhabitants of vernal pools. And it's one thing where because of that, we want to protect them and we want to see some new habitats develop. But on the other hand, we love our ducks. We want to see them protected too.
And it also, vernal pools provide a migratory stop, a pit stop, if you will, for migratory fowl. So if you get rid of those vernal pools, then the waterfowl is going to have to look somewhere else to rest, to feed along the route.
Last June, the state adopted a vernal pool indicator. I learned this from the book. The spotted salamander is a state amphibian. You've mentioned the spotted salamander a couple times. The season's over for spotted salamanders now. You're probably not going to see them.
Well, it's
pretty early on.
It depends where you're at in the state. Here in central Ohio, a lot of the activity is just probably about ended. There probably are still some spotted salamanders in the pools, but the big runs took place early this month when we got that warmer weather with a lot of rain, and there was a lot of runs that went on then. It's kind of this year, it's been kind of, the weather's kind of been up and down. It's been hard to kind of predict when the runs are going to be. Some years it's real distinct. You come right out of winter, you get the warmer weather, you get some rain, and they all run at once. This year it's kind of been a trickling in. But in northern parts of the state, spotteds have not run yet, or they're just starting to run. So it varies a lot south and north what goes on in the state.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. Mick McCashin, wetland ecologist for Ohio EPA's Division of Surface Water. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Appreciate it. And John O'Meara, he's executive director of the Metro Parks. Thanks for being here, John, today.
Thank you, Ann. Great opportunity to promote the protection of vernal pools.
And David Celebrezzi, he's the director of air and water special projects at the Ohio Environmental Council, where he focuses on the Wetlands and Streams Project. David, thanks for giving us a call in the first place.
Yeah, thank you. If people would like a copy of the guide, they are available on our website.
Okay, so we'll have all those websites posted at our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks for listening. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.